This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello folks, today we continue Palmerston North City Council Committee Revelations, this time with Brent Barrett, who is the chairperson of the Palmerston North City Council Sustainability Committee, also dealing with resilience, I guess. So welcome, Brent.
Thanks, Anne. Pleasure to be here.
To me, sustainability means looking after what you've got and goes with resilience. So what's your definition of sustainability?
Yeah, thanks, Anne. There's a few kind of dictionary ones, but the one that kind of works for me is thriving today so that we're thriving in the future as well. So making sure that the future generations are looked after.
All right. So it's nothing to do with buildings or anything like that then?
Well, I think it's to do with just about everything. Yeah. You know, it's how we approach life in terms of buildings and getting around and what we do for work, what we do for pleasure. It's pretty all-encompassing from my point of view.
That's for sure, because it's life basically, isn't it? Mm. And resilience?
Yeah, really interesting one, resilience. It's gotten heaps of airtime, especially with the cyclone and everything of recent times. People tend to think of it as kind of, you know, that something strong or something can resist, you know, damage. But I think it's a bit overused personally, and I like thinking about adaptation more, because I think really being adaptable and being flexible is what in the end can make you resilient over time.
All right.
So less like a block of concrete and more like something that can shape shift and adapt.
Well, you have to, don't you, in different circumstances. So I
Absolutely.
Guess that makes real sense.
Yeah.
Cool. So in your long service with Palmerston North City Council, have you dealt with sustainability before?
I have done a bit, and I think, you know, sustainability is one of the things that kind of drew me towards council. So I joined in 2016, thanks to the voters' confidence in me. And really some of those things that were motivating me towards council was around sustainability, environmental issues. And so I've had a fair hand in that stuff for a few years now. So just starting on a third term, so it's been a wee while.
Now, Lorna told us that there's such a thing as terms of reference, so got basically an outline of what your committee's supposed to be doing. So can you generally outline your sustainability committee?
I can try. I will say that one of the challenges that we face is that kind of the different committee categories are kind of a little bit tricky sometimes. But the headline for us is environmental well-being. So anything that has to do with environmental well-being in the community, and that has to do with kind of, you know, how we manage our parks and reserves, how we manage our water resources, how we do waste minimization and resource recovery, how we respond to climate change. So there's a whole lot of different things that sit in there. How we support biodiversity, bringing nature back to the city. But really, you know, environmental well-being is kind of the umbrella that it sits under.
That makes more sense now, because a lot of it, I looked up your terms of reference, and a lot of it was to do with water.
Mm.
How often does your committee meet?
5 times a year.
So your next meeting is?
29th of March, 9 o'clock in the morning. Everyone's welcome, of course. You can dial in online if you don't want to show up in the chamber. All of the council meetings are online now to be watched on video streaming if somebody wants to, or they can go back and look at a historic one if they don't have time to watch it live.
Right. So there you are, folks. 29th of March next week. You can attend. You just turn up at the City Council buildings at 9 o'clock. Is that correct?
Or? That's right. Yeah. So it's just in the Customer Service Center doors, and then you can go – there's a flight of stairs up to the right, and there's also an elevator. So if somebody has mobility needs, they can access as well. It's just up on the first floor. The door is always open, and everyone's always welcome.
And as I said before, when I looked at the terms of reference, there's a large part which was to do with water.
Yes.
So how are we, as a city, conserving water?
Yeah, great question, eh? We've taken an approach of recent times of really trying to encourage people to kind of think about conserving before we need to actually enforce any sort of conservation measure. And so you may remember maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago, kind of there'd be nothing from council, and then suddenly you'd hear, we must go to water restrictions and everything. Whereas now we kind of take an approach of saying, well, it's likely that we might get to water restrictions on a certain summer, unlikely this summer, but on some summers, and trying to get people to think early about just dialing back a little bit. And what we've been able to achieve with that is pretty remarkable. So without imposing restrictions, but just putting communications out from council to encourage people, we've managed to save 1 million liters a day, which is a huge amount of water, 1 million liters a day,
wow,
just on voluntary, just on voluntary community response. There are things that you can do with more formal restrictions. There's things you can do with capturing rainwater, which is really great. And there's things you can do with putting a price on water services, all of which can also influence demand. But we've done less of those things and more of just voluntary.
So at the moment, there are no concrete plans, if you like, to actually start charging for the water.
Well,
I mean, we've all got water meters, so it's ready to go.
We don't all have water meters.
Oh, don't we? Oh.
No, we do all have a connection, obviously, and there's a potential to put a water meter in if desired. One of the things that you and many listeners will be aware of is that the government's proposing quite a market shift in terms of how water services are managed in Aotearoa, New Zealand. And so questions like whether or not to charge for water services would most likely be taken out of a local council's hands and made by
thou shalt pay,
somebody else.
Says Mr. Government, so, or Mrs. Government or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're kind of realistically, when you look at the water infrastructure needs, there is a case that we need more investment to actually improve our water services system. It's the foundation of life, literally and figuratively. You know, it is essential, absolutely essential service. So you do need to think about how you fund it and whether it is appropriate. There, I saw really interesting data from Christchurch City Council about the span of residential water use, you know, and there's a very few number of users that use an extraordinary amount. Now, it may be that they have an Olympic swimming pool in their backyard.
Oh, right, they fill every week.
Which they fill every week. Or it may be that there's leaks in the system clearly putting a meter on and then monitoring it allows you to respond to where there are inefficiencies. And one of the ways that you could respond is potentially with price.
All right. So there is a management plan for the water.
Yes.
So is that revised regularly, or is it followed? Do you follow the previous one? Because obviously councils, well, they may or may not totally change over each 3 years.
Yeah.
But or are they rewritten, and what research is done or needed to revise it? Or
yeah, great question, especially with something like water infrastructure, because it's all underground, and so you don't see it. It's a little bit hard to get to. We've consciously, especially over the last 3 years, really worked to improve the knowledge that we have within council about what we'd call the state of the assets, how well maintained they are, how up to date they are, when they'll need replacing. And that's helped us build a much better plan for managing the future of those water assets. Again, whether that's this council or whether it's a Three Waters entity doing the managing, there's now quite a good baseline of information that we can work from, and I'm pleased that we've taken that on. It's been quite challenging. When I first joined council, I remember one meeting they took us into, and they said that the rate at which we're replacing the pipes in the water network was only half of the rate at which they were wearing out.
All right.
And I thought, well, gosh, that's a problem, isn't it? You know, so there are some things that have really been done to get a better measure of that challenge, and to put some steps in place to, improve what we're doing with the planning for keeping those assets working for us.
So this plan, does that include all three waters for
So Three Waters is a central government proposal and now a series of laws that are being enacted, which would basically take over the management of
all the to do with water.
Drinking water, the wastewater, and the stormwater operations within all communities in New Zealand. You know, the work that council's doing in terms of the day-to-day of managing the current system and the planning for the future of the system is relevant kind of regardless of whether councils ultimately end up still doing that or whether it's a Three Waters service from central government.
So in part of your planning, you have to plan for safety. So where does our drinking or washing water come from?
Yeah, great question. Absolutely. So our water team's amazing. They're really, really, really good at what they do. And they take it so seriously, which obviously is so important because when you're at home, you want to flick the tap on, you want to grab a glass of water, you want to know, you know, that it is clean. So about – it depends how much it rains, but about 60% of our water comes from the Turitea Dam, which is up behind the city in the hills. It's a series of two dams, actually, and they store a huge amount of fresh water that falls from the sky. And that runs through a quite comprehensive water treatment plant that takes out, you know, everything that would be a problem.
Bacteria, et cetera, whatever.
Yeah, and gives us a very, very clean water. In fact, we've gotten national awards for that water from a drinking water standard. It is amazing. We also then – where does the other 40% come from? Well, that's from a number of bores or wells around the city, and it's pumped up, and it's treated basically at the top of that well. In all cases, there is chlorination of that water so that we have an extra layer of assurance around the safety of that water for drinking. Almost all of our water also has fluoridation added to it, although I believe Bunnythorpe has yet to come online with that, but that's because of the relatively recent transition of that community from Manawatu District into the city. And obviously, just because you change a line on the map doesn't mean that all the pipes and all the water networks suddenly reconnects. So it's taken us a number of years to make some of those improvements out in that community.
Right. And before you mentioned waste and stormwaters as being the other two to do with the waters.
Yes.
So what's the difference between waste and stormwater?
Yeah, so wastewater is what comes out of basically our buildings. So whether it's houses or businesses, if you're using the shower or the toilet or the sink or your dishwasher or washing your clothes, any of those things go into a series of pipes that lead from your house or your business and all connect up and eventually get down to the wastewater treatment plant, which is right down the end of what we call Tip Road in Awapuni. And that begins a series of cleaning it up. Then putting the treated wastewater discharge goes into the Manawatu River at that point.
And that was what we had our public consultation on, you know, where we thought it should go.
Yes, absolutely. So, the biggest, I think, in the city's history, public conversation about a council decision has been around what we called the Nature Calls Project, which was what we wanted to do with the future of that wastewater treatment, and has seen us take a direction that will see a much higher standard of treatment and also see in low flow times when the river is more like a stream, a proportion, 75% of the treated wastewater discharge will be irrigated onto land and only 25% at the maximum would be going into the river at that time.
All right. So, and what, stormwater?
Wow, where do you start with stormwater? We've just seen what storms can do with water, and it is, you know, a really challenging thing for cities and communities to do a great job of planning. So, we've you can almost see it too in the history of the city. You know, there was kind of a time where we thought, well, we can just kind of put it all in channels, or we can just put it all in pipes. We don't have to worry about it. What's more and more evident now is that you really do need plenty of green space that can absorb some of that water. That you may have heard of a sponge city.
Yes, yes.
Been used.
I may have mentioned that.
Indeed. So it's ensuring that when a lot of water arrives suddenly, which climate change tends to exacerbate these kind of challenges, that the city surfaces have some capacity to absorb some of that. So that means some softer surfaces and some open areas that are retained. So more recent subdivisions have had those much more explicitly designed in.
All right.
And we also have things called rain gardens. And so if you look at the what you think of as the berm, mm-hmm. of some of the newer subdivisions and newer areas, it's kind of these rocky patches that quite often have a couple native plants in them. And you think, that's interesting. Doesn't look like a lawn. And it's not meant to be a lawn. What it is a special area so that when it rains, it really soaks down and keeps that water from kind of spilling off and flooding around the place.
Right. So there's not much we can do about, the public anyway. I'm talking about storm water. But wastewater, you're going to say we can do something?
Well, I think there's a bit we can do. Rainwater tanks, can have some ability. So anything that, we can do on our own properties to keep the water there a little bit longer before it sort of shoots away. Not paving over the whole of a property with concrete. Things like catching rainwater off of roofs can help. But, a lot of that responsibility does sit with the city.
And what about wastewater? What can the public do about lessening that amount?
Yeah, well, again, there are options where if people choose to, they can split off two types of water. One is called gray water, and that's kind of water that is a bit less dirty, let's say. It might come through a shower or some other use in a house, and it can be held in a tank and then used for watering a garden or doing some other outdoor use of water where it doesn't need to be to a drinking water standard and can help you grow your tomatoes or whatever you want to do in the summer. So that's a great way to minimize the amount of water that goes into the wastewater system. And the other is just being a bit conscious about where you need to use water, and especially probably the number one thing I would say for the community, if we could have one wish around wastewater, it would be that people didn't actually use what we call incinerators. So they're machines that people use to kind of grind up spare veggies and fruits and stuff, all the leftover food bits, because that's really, really hard to get back out of wastewater. It's really expensive. And so we can save ourselves a huge amount of time and effort and cost as a city if we don't use incinerators.
My husband will be happy to hear that because he took ours out.
Oh, well, your husband deserves a civic prize for helping that, Anne. That's fantastic.
Right. So we're done with water. And in the terms of reference, there's the Manawatu River Plan is mentioned. So what is this?
Yeah, great question. So you will have seen, and people that have lived in the community over years, all the kind of improvements that have been made around the Manawatu River with the shared path, with Heara Katahi, the new bridge, the Te Rere Pā, which was just opened. And the little things too, a little bit of artwork there or a bit of exercise equipment, all that stuff has come from council before I joined. I can't really take any credit for this, but council before I joined took a really conscious decision about wanting to develop what we call a linear park all along the length of the river. And so that Manawatu River Plan just lays out what the priorities are in there, how we're going to work with Mana Whenua Iwi, how we're going to work with the community, and what sorts of improvements we want to make in that space. Obviously, they need to be reasonably capable of coping with floods and other things that can happen in river plains. But the community loves the riverside, and so we do want to see it continually improved.
So it's not necessarily about the water actually that's in the river, it's the beautification or the uses of,
that's
of
right.
the surrounding area.
Absolutely, yeah, the good way of summarizing it. And most of that, you know, the quality of the river is much more through our wastewater and stormwater planning and work.
So that would come into your reserves and pathways, presumably. What does that incorporate? Every park and reserve or Turitea because that's the water one? Or?
Yeah, look, so we have kind of a range of different sizes and you know, so the Manawatu River Linear Park, the Esplanade, you know, Linklater, Turitea, Te Apiti out at the gorge are all kind of areas that have quite significant prominence for the city. And really, you know, the city has a lot of value in, you know, Bill Brown Park, really important for sport. So individual parks that are quite prominent will have their very own detailed management plan.
Right.
Whereas kind of overall as a city, what we're working towards is making sure that all of our parks, if we're, you know, have at least a little bit of shade so that if somebody needs some shade, they can have some shade, has some access to water, has a place to sit down. And if it's one that's oriented towards play, has some play equipment. If it's one that's oriented towards sports, it's well managed in that way. So it's kind of a – yes, it is ultimately every single park and reserve, but only kind of those bigger ones have kind of a really specific plan around them. I would be remiss to not mention some of the reserves up in Summerhill that are planted up more for biodiversity and walking and exercise type uses. So they're not kind of sport field type things, but they're very precious and we really value those as well.
So they're looked after nicely?
Well, there's a huge amount of community effort that goes up in those areas in particular to restore some of the vegetation in those gullies through a project called Green Corridors. And also, you know, a lot of council staff effort goes in there as well. There are certainly, you know, I regularly hear concerns from constituents about either weeds that are getting away in there or you know, people not taking care and, you know, leaving rubbish and those kind of things there. So ultimately, all those parks and reserves do need the community to look after them. For several reasons. One is it's incredibly expensive if council does it all. But I think it's really a great way of local kind of neighborhoods kind of expressing their community involvement as kind of looking after their own reserve a bit and making sure that if there is a big problem, we hear about it at council. And if there's a little problem, maybe it can just be taken care of by the locals.
So do people notify you if there is a problem?
Well, we'd recommend that people just call the main council number and log any concerns there because that's really the most efficient way. And likewise, if people just want to send an email to the council, it's all available either on the website or just pick up the phone.
And that will go wherever it needs to go.
Yeah, so the staff there are really good at kind of working out what the issue is and directing it to the right part of staff. But as elected members, as representatives in the community, people do have concerns. We're always happy to hear those, and people are welcome to get in touch anytime.
Right. So does monetary expenditure need to be allocated in your committee? So for X amount for water, X amount for this,
yeah, et cetera. That's good question. That's kind of the mechanics of how council works. Our budgeting decisions really happen at a whole of council level and kind of across all those kind of domains. So we just had a big meeting last week just to have the first crack at the next 12 months budget. And really that was looking across all, not just the environmental well-being, but the cultural well-being, the social well-being, and the economic well-being as well, and trying to understand the needs of the community in those different areas and then respond appropriately in terms of projects and budgets to support them.
Right. So we're almost out of time. Goodness me,
gosh,
haven't we been having
fun? It does
fun?
Roll through. Well, thank you, Anne. Yeah.
So we won't touch on the asset manager plan because, well, actually we might. So what is meant by resource recovery?
Resource recovery is our effort as a city and with the community to try to minimize the amount of waste that is created in the first place, and then minimize the amount of that that ends up in the landfill. So, you know, recycling is an obvious example of it, but we're also trying to work to encourage people to think about using less resources in the first place and generating less waste in the first place.
So if somebody has an idea about recycling, et cetera, would they take that to you or just send it to the general council?
Yeah, look, happy to hear the ideas. I would say Environment Network Manawatu is a great group and resource for that. And right now they're actually have available a fund, I want to say – I won't say the exact numbers of dollars, but they actually have a grant open right now looking for people in the community with ideas about reducing the amount of waste that goes to landfill, and they're prepared to put money in to help those ideas get off the ground. So Environment Network Manawatu is a really key player in that space.
Well, that's great to know. Excuse me. Almost out of breath as well. So it's not just the water that the asset management goes in for.
No. So council has asset management plans across a whole lot of things: transport, water, resource recovery, housing, property, parks and reserves, on and on.
Well, I guess it's life altogether, isn't it?
It is. It
incorporates everything that you can. So we've got a couple of minutes left, so just very briefly we'll go to – you've mentioned your inspiration to stand for council because you're interested in environmental things.
Yeah.
You're a relevant background. I understand that you're a Greens Party member.
Yeah, so I can just share a little bit there. So I came to New Zealand from the States, moved here in 2000 to Palmerston North, and took a job as a scientist out at Ag Research near Massey. So agricultural science is kind of my background professionally. And yeah, I stood in 2016 because I did want to make sure that there was a strong voice for the environment, but also have real interests around community and people and social things, as well as economic prosperity as well. So definitely leading on environment, but interested across a wide range. And what else would I say? Yes, a Green Party member. I had been a Green Party member for a long time, for about 15 years before I stood for council. And I thought, well, the natural thing to do might be to tell people that I am. So I took that approach, and so far it's worked out reasonably well.
So apart from the fact that a lot of people are saying, oh, well, the Greens cut off the forestry rights to burn off their slash.
Yeah, there's a few myths out there, and that's one of them actually. So if you look at green policy around forestry, you'll see a much, much better forestry system than what we have today. Which is hopefully a reason for people to consider looking at that policy and seeing the value that it would bring in terms of protecting communities from the sort of damage that we've seen on the East Coast.
Right. Well, we may have to get you back to talk about some other aspects
of the... I'd be happy to, Anne, anytime.
...of the Sustainability and Resource and Committee. So thank you very much, Brett.
Thank you, Anne.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.